This week on Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. Pro-Palestinian demonstrators stage worldwide protests on November 4 to call for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip.
We're done asking nicely. We're ready just to shut it down and no business as usual. It's our responsibility, it's our complicity. Until and unless we stand up, we are directly complicit in the murder of these children.
Activists hold an action in the port of Oakland to stop a Pentagon-ready reserve fleet ship carrying military cargo to Israel.
The people and government of Bolivia has taken the decision to break diplomatic ties from today with the state of Israel.
Ongoing Israeli war crimes in Palestine cause diplomatic reverberations in Latin America. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host, Ann Garrison. On Saturday, November 4, pro-Palestinian demonstrators staged worldwide protests to call for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Pacifica's Thomas O'Rourke reports on the massive rally held in Washington, D.C.
On Saturday, November 4th, a massive rally and march took place in Washington, D.C. to demand a ceasefire in Gaza and peace and justice in Palestine. March organizers have issued a preliminary estimate of 300,000 protesters. However, as a reporter with decades of experience attending mass rallies in D.C., and as someone who walked through the five solid blocks of protesters from 9th to 14th Streets on Pennsylvania Avenue, I estimate the crowd to have been half a million. Organizers called the march historic and a political earthquake in response to the mass murder of some 10,000 Palestinians in just 4 weeks since October 7th. Here are a few sounds and voices from the November 4th rally for Palestine.
Are here to demand an end to the genocide against the Palestinian people with three central demands. We're calling for an immediate ceasefire. We are calling for an end to U.S. military aid to Israel. And we are calling to lift the siege on Gaza, which for 17 years has suffocated the people of Gaza and turned Gaza into an open-air prison.
An injury to one is an injury to all, and American-made bombs are being used to kill the families of Americans in Palestine, in addition to thousands and thousands of other people, and our government should not support that.
Oslo Agreement and all this political work didn't help Palestinian people to live in peace. 75 years of suffering, losing people close to you, finding them hurt all the time, And even after we get our citizenship, I'm not able to visit my family there. My dad died in Gaza, and I was not able to visit and see him because the border always closed.
Those were voices from the November 4th rally for Palestine in Washington, D.C. A broad coalition of hundreds of organizations contributed to the massive size and success of this event. Co-sponsors included Palestinian Youth Movement, Answer Coalition, American Muslim Alliance, the People's Forum, National Students for Justice in Palestine, Al-Adwa, and the U.S. Palestinian Community Network, among others. Protesters arrived in buses from Chicago, Tampa, and across the eastern seaboard. Organizers also announced a sister action in San Francisco that drew some 50,000. For Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, this is Thomas O'Rourke.
Music by Ramzi Abouerdouane. On Friday, November 3rd, 2023, dozens of supporters of Palestine entered a restricted area at the Port of Oakland and stopped a Pentagon Ready Reserve fleet ship carrying military cargo to Israel. Participants spoke to Pacifica's Steve Seltzer about why they were trying to stop the ship.
Not another nickel, not another dime.
No more money for Israel's crimes.
Not another nickel, not another dime.
We're here today at the Port of Oakland. There's a protest for Berth 21. There's a military ship which is loading cargo.
There's a military shipment that's leaving the Port of Oakland, and we're here to stop it. These weapons are going to the genocide of people living in Gaza from the Israeli government, backed by the U.S. military-industrial complex. These are U.S. tax dollars that are at play here, and we represent the majority of people in the United States who want a ceasefire and don't want these weapons to be used, and stand together with all the communities that have endured genocide to say not in our name.
And it seems like the Congress is going in another direction. They just approved billions more for Israel. Even to raise the issue of a ceasefire on the part of Biden and the Republicans, it seems off the table.
Yeah, I mean, Congress is completely upholding a unilateral position that the U.S. has over the Middle East. It's U.S. hegemony that is at play here, and Congress is genuflecting to the military-industrial complex to continue to create more weapons and to use them and to control the markets for the United States.
So, yeah, this ship is called the Cape Orlando, and we've been told that they believe that it's actually just loading right now for crew. So it's loading provisions in order to set sail. And then it's supposed to go to Tacoma, where they believe it will be picking up military equipment to send to Israel. And we found out about it pretty late, and so we think most of the crew is on board. We're out here to try and encourage people to make the right decision and decide not to be complicit in genocide and not handle material going to Israel. And really, we want to answer the call from trade unionists in Palestine, like Belgium did, and encourage all of our working people to agree not to handle anything going to Israel that's going to help them to commit genocide in Gaza.
And the U.S. Congress just passed a bill giving them more money. They get a tremendous amount of money already. It seems like the Republicans and Democrats want to give more money.
Yeah, both parties, I think, do want to give them more money, which, I mean, makes total sense. Israel has always been an important geographical outpost for Western countries' interests. They know that as long as Israel is there and Israel is strong, that the interests of capitalist Western countries are going to be upheld in the region. They have an important position within that sort of structure.
And thousands, 8,000 of people have been killed, many children. What does that say about not only Israel, but the U.S. government supporting this?
Well, we know that us who've been in the pro-Palestine struggle have known this all along. The U.S. is not just an ally of Israel. The U.S. has been the primary enabler of Israel's occupation, Israel's crimes over the decades, whether it is settlements, occupation, the daily violence in the West Bank and Gaza. Israel is always, the U.S. has been the primary enabler of this, and both by funding and arming and providing the political cover and the diplomatic support.
How's it going to stop?
Well, our people on the ground have always withstood and are going to continue to do what they need to do and resist and be heroic because that's what they have to do. But there has not been a liberation movement in history that succeeded on its own, that has succeeded without international solidarity, both material and political and so on. So we here and people everywhere in the world have to do what they have to do. Right now, at this moment, we have to be disruptive. We have to continue to grow this movement, and we have to change the policy of this government.
Well, I'm here because I am a U.S. taxpayer, and our money is going to send these weapons to Israel to kill Palestinian babies in Gaza, demolish homes, and just commit more war crimes after more war crimes. And it's torture just sitting here watching, scrolling, trying to find any news and information. All the media has been shut down, no water, no food, no electricity. We're all worried sick about our friends and loved ones and our family members being bombed indiscriminately. And
half the people killed are children, I mean, thousands of children.
Children, men, and women. There's no excuse. Nobody deserves to die like this. It's just a crime against humanity. And Israel needs to just stop with whatever it's trying to do. It's enough. We get the point. You've got money, you got military, you got weapons. You can kill us. Okay, fine. We're done. We're done asking nicely. We're ready just to shut it down and no business as usual. And as long as this criminal regime is being supported and funded with our tax dollars, it's our funds, it's our responsibility, it's our complicity. Until and unless we stand up, we are directly complicit in the murder of these children.
My name is Clarence Thomas. I am a third generation retired ILW Local 10 member. I am here to stand in solidarity with you. It is long overdue. We are waiting for a statement from the ILWU calling for an immediate ceasefire and condemning the carnage that is taking place that can best be described as retaliatory genocide. I'm here this morning to express my solidarity. This is very important. It is so important that people understand the power of the working class. It is the working class that fights wars. It's the working class that dies. It's also the working class who stands up against imperialist wars, as we are doing today. There have been calls by the labor movement all over the world for workers to refuse to handle any cargo or material supplies going to Israel. That is our right and our privilege. And in 1939, when Japan invaded Manchuria, there were people from the community who came out and did a community blockade. It was very successful. Franklin Delano Roosevelt wrote a letter to International President Harry Bridges and told him that he needs to stay out of U.S. foreign policy. Harry's response is that it's our right and our privilege as workers. And this is the tradition of the ILWU. Many of our members, younger members, are very familiar with the history of the anti-apartheid struggle. Boycott, divestment, sanctions. It was a very important movement on the part of the working class. Israel is an apartheid state, just like South Africa was. And it's important for people to know that the great Bishop Tutu said that the Palestinians are being treated worse than black South Africans. Black South Africans have passes to work on the ports. Palestinians do not. They don't have longshore workers, which is what I was. They don't have the ability to load and unload cargo and to be able to participate in the global economy. This is outrageous, and we need to stand up and fight back. From Ferguson to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine.
Free, not free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Those were participants at an action in the Port of Oakland to stop a Pentagon-ready reserve fleet ship carrying military cargo to Israel. The protests grew throughout the day. Four protesters clung to the ship's ladder for several hours until they were arrested, and the ship then departed.
بس ما رحل كن طفل أو ابن أو أب أو ابن شعدت نقهر عليه هلا نحن عاد رحلنا عائلات وعاد رحلنا طائفات بس إنا الله يا دول يا أهل العرب يا عرب يا كل الدول النامي يا الخلايا النامي اصحوا حالكن نحن إنا الله لليوم والتاني عاد رحلنا عائلات وطائفات إنا اليوم ابي روح شهداء اطفال اطفال نحن ارهابيين نحن هاي التربية هاي التربية
That's Free Palestine by Gorilla Beats. This is Specificus Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Ann Garrison. Ongoing Israeli war crimes in Palestine have caused diplomatic reverberations in Latin America. The nation of Bolivia has severed official relations with Israel, while other countries have recalled their ambassadors to Israel in protest over Israeli atrocities. Pacifica's Don DeBar has more.
The people and government of Bolivia has taken the decision to break diplomatic ties from today with the state of Israel.
That was the Bolivian ambassador to the United Nations at UN headquarters in New York, announcing that his country was severing diplomatic ties with Israel.
Because we consider it a state that does not respect life of peoples, international law, or international humanitarian law.
For more on that, we go to Nicaragua to speak with two journalists based in the region, Stephen Sefton and Camila Escalante. Camila, why don't you first fill us in about exactly what's going on with Bolivia and this, and then you guys maybe give a little analysis, lay of the land of the region there as they look towards what's happening around Gaza.
Well, we've been waiting all of this time to hear if any countries will stop with the empty letters of repudiation against Israel for its genocide, for the atrocities and violence that it's committing against the people of Gaza and Palestinians in general. And finally, the Foreign Ministry of Bolivia came out and officially stated that they are formally cutting ties with the state of Israel, effective immediately, that they had communicated that with Israel's diplomats there. Of course, it's not a huge, you know, win. There certainly people are going to be very inspired and uplifted by this news. But of course, this is a country that for 10 and a half years, since 2009, had already cut relations with Israel because of previous atrocities committed by the Zionists against Gazans during Evo Morales' first term in office. So he decided to cut ties with Israel. He imposed visa requirements that hadn't previously been imposed for Israelis to visit the country. And until the coup, 2019, they had had no relations. Of course, Jeanine Añez under the dictatorship brought back those relations. So those were just severed once again, once and for all. Then we got news from the governments of Colombia and the governments of Chile that they are recalling, I guess would be the closest word in English, their diplomats that are currently stationed, their ambassadors that are currently stationed in Israel. And of course, this means that they are calling them back to the country and going to give them further instructions. So we don't actually know what this means. It could mean that it's a very firm gesture or warning in the direction of possibly severing ties with Israel. But of course, these countries, particularly, Colombia, but also many other countries of Latin America, have very extensive and deep trade with Israel. So it's not an easy thing for them to break relations if they do that. But what we're seeing right now is a huge gap between the populations of these countries, where in Latin America, so many people are demanding that their governments sever ties with the Zionists for the crimes against humanity, the war crimes, the genocide, the ethnic cleansing they're carrying out, and the governments who have just given some lip service but have not actually converted any of what they've said, any of their statements from the foreign ministry or whatever else, into any concrete actions. But what people are demanding is that these governments immediately sever ties with Israel, because Israel is not a self-sustaining country or state nor military. They don't have the resources on their own to be committing these crimes and violence and wiping out Palestinians in Gaza. They're receiving funding from these massive trade and cooperation that they maintain primarily with the United States, obviously those NATO countries, but many other countries around the world. And so the very least we can do, and of course the bar is very low, is to cut relations with Israel. And so we're hoping to see more of those announcements in the coming days and weeks.
It seems inevitable to me that it'll become practically impossible for certainly for countries that claim to be progressive in any sense to maintain diplomatic relations with Israel. It'll be particularly difficult for Argentina, which has, I think it's got the largest Jewish population outside Israel itself.
Argentina almost was Israel, actually. Well, Herzl, back, one of the founding members of the Zionist movement, was trying to decide whether to locate the Zionist project in where it is or in Argentina, because there was a land offer.
Right. Prior to the Balfour Declaration, there was even a plan to suggest to the Zionists that they settle in Africa. But anyway, I'm going back to Latin America. The four main ALBA countries, Cuba, Venezuela, Bolivia, and Nicaragua, cut their relations with Israel, as Camila mentioned, back in 2009, 2010, following the caste-led genocidal operation by Israel against Gaza at that time. And only Nicaragua re-established relations in 2017 for reasons that I don't quite understand, but they did. But Nicaragua is one of the few countries, along with Cuba, Venezuela, and surprisingly countries like Uruguay and even Chile, that maintain ambassadorial relations with the state of Palestine. Who knows how things will pan out in terms of what individual countries decide to do. But I think Camilla's right in saying that there's incredibly strong pressure on practically all the governments in Latin America to cut their relations with Israel, faced with the unforgivable genocide that's taking place in Gaza, with the full support apparently of the United States and a great deal of support from the European Union.
Yeah, just the way the whole war there is developing, the implications for that region where you guys are and for all of us, are pretty large, given the possibility of either a major interruption in oil markets, which would drive mad global inflation, basically, for food supply, energy, all of the things that that are subsequent down the food chain, so to speak, from oil prices, and also, of course, the prospect of a global war. Are people talking about this in the media, but also just on the street in around where you are,
Camilla?
Well, I think people are beginning to speak about that. And of course, there is the cue, for Brazil. Brazil is currently this month the president of the UN Security Council. Everyone is very disappointed around the world that the UN Security Council failed to reach any sort of a resolution on Gaza and Israel, despite that the UN General Assembly was able to. But of course, there's really obvious reasons why we have some permanent members that are vetoing each other and will always do so. But we have Brazil trying to sneak in and grab a permanent spot on the Security Council in the future. So many people right now in the Global South and in Latin America in particular are looking to Brazil for some sort of leadership. This is a country in which the MST, the Landless Workers Movement, has actually sent humanitarian aid to Gaza themselves as a social movement this past week, and where so many of Lula's base supporters have very progressive positions when it comes to Gaza, and they have denounced the genocide that's taking place. Actually, a lot of people around South America have some sort of a tie. Obviously, the Palestinian population that is so large in Chile, for example, many people have gone in brigades. They've visited Gaza. They've seen the situation firsthand for themselves. But we're waiting for our leadership to make some sort of move. But I do think it always comes back to the same context that we've spoken about before, which is that as all of this is happening and all of these things are taking place overseas, the United States and Southcom continues to encroach on South America, on Latin America and the Caribbean, installing its vessels, installing all of its military equipment, continuing to, at the same time as countries like Israel, maintain that security cooperation, Israel and Colombia. And also there's the relationship between Israel and Mexico. And so these are things that, you know, our governments have to be very wary of and very, very careful with. But I think it's not inconceivable to me that some sort of conflict could extend to Latin America and the Caribbean. And in fact, the Southcom general or commander Laura Richardson is one among many, including many people of the Republican Party, who are accusing Latin America and Latin American governments of harboring so-called members of Hezbollah in their countries. They're specifically making those claims with regards to Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua right now. So it's really frightening to think about what they're going to try to achieve with those sorts of claims that they're making.
That's scary, isn't it? It sounds like they're trying to enable an action.
That was Pacifica's Don DeBar with journalists Camila Escalante and Stephen Sefton. Since the taping of this segment, Honduras has also recalled its ambassador from Israel. That was Intifada by Ska P. The attacks on hospitals and healthcare workers in Gaza is enraging healthcare workers in the U.S. Over 100 healthcare workers and unionists rallied at San Francisco General Hospital to demand an end to the bombing. They also talked about the horrendous working conditions of healthcare workers in Gaza.
Occupation is a crime!
Occupation is a crime!
So we want healthcare, no more warfare!
We want healthcare, no more warfare.
We are San Francisco Healthcare Workers for Palestine, a group of workers in the healthcare industry who are here to demand a ceasefire in the war on Gaza. My name is Matt. I'm a nurse and I'm a grad student at UCSF. I'm studying public health nursing and I work with underserved communities. We are healthcare workers here today, organized and walking out together because we are appalled at Israel's war on Gaza, which has claimed over 9,000 lives in the past few weeks, including thousands of women and children and dozens of UN relief workers, as well as healthcare workers. We are especially appalled at the targeting of hospitals, clinics, and ambulances, a practice that has intensified during this wave of violence. Just today, a missile hit the entrance of Al-Shifa Hospital, killing and injuring dozens. As healthcare workers, we have all sworn to protect life, and the conditions in Gaza horrify us, not just as healthcare workers, but as people of conscience. We denounce this violence and the occupation in the harshest of terms.
I'm Monica. I am a family doctor here. I have worked here at SF General Hospital for my entire career. I am here because my conscience would not let me be anywhere else today. We are at a pivotal moment. All across the globe, people are coming together to denounce violence and to demand an immediate ceasefire. We are a part of a powerful, ever-growing international collective here to say that we refuse to be complicit in supporting any policies that uphold senseless violence, settler colonialism, occupation, and genocide. So this is our solidarity statement, and these are our demands. We are a collective of healthcare workers who, from the heart of San Francisco, are calling on our representative, Nancy Pelosi, and on healthcare workers around the country to denounce war crimes of attacks on hospitals, healthcare workers, ambulances, and schools. We call for an immediate ceasefire and to support the Ceasefire Now resolution. We call to allow the immediate entry of humanitarian and medical aid into Gaza. We demand an end to U.S. arming of Israel. We demand an end to the siege on Gaza, and we demand an end to the occupation of Palestine. We call on residency, department, and hospital leadership across the country to please protect our healthcare workers who speak out to advocate for the human rights of Palestinian people from facing online and physical threats and workplace retaliation. We call on our city to denounce the genocide in Gaza and to divest from weaponry used in the Israeli occupation.
We have Dr. Jess Hanam.
Thank you for having me here today, everybody. It is so deeply meaningful to me as a Palestinian and to my community to see you all here today. My community is experiencing a deep moment of grief, and juxtaposed with that grief is deep optimism. We are burying a Palestinian child every 4 minutes in Gaza right now. I want you to think about that. Every 4 minutes, a Palestinian child in Gaza is being killed. A total of 4,500 Palestinian children have been killed. Over 9,000 have been killed by the Israeli war machine supported by this government. The grief we feel is so deep. And it's not just from this last couple of weeks. It's from 75 years of brutal occupation of our indigenous lands. This did not start on October 7th. This is 75 years. And if you want to be an ally with Palestine and with Palestinians, you got to know your history. Don't let them fool you. This is not a religious war. This is straight out settler colonialism, white supremacy. Straight out European white supremacy, settler colonialism. If they try to tell you otherwise, they're trying to fool you. Know your history. I want to talk about intersectionality, because the Palestinian struggle is all of our struggle. To my black brothers and sisters, what Eric Garner and George Floyd said, "I can't breathe," we feel you. Palestinians can't breathe. We are in the same struggle. When our indigenous brothers and sisters are trying to reclaim the land that they've been ethnically cleansed from for hundreds and hundreds of years. That's the Palestinian struggle. Palestinians are indigenous to Palestine, and all we want is our connection to our indigenous land. It's the same struggle. When our brothers and sisters from Central and South America approach the border and are shot, and denied access to humanity and dignity and equal rights. That's the Palestinian struggle. We get shot at every time we try to claim our right and our dignity and our human rights. To our brothers and sisters in the API community, we stand with you against racism and racist attacks, which we experience on the same at the same level in every day. So I want you all to know, this struggle, the Palestinian struggle, is all of our struggles.
As a former member of the Labor Council and as a representative of UPTI, my union, University Professional and Technical Employees, which represents 17,000 workers in the University of California system statewide, we passed a resolution, but we tried to bring it to the Labor Council, and the APAC supporters on the Labor Council basically stopped it from going forward. And then we got a letter from the AFL-CIO National in September of 2021 telling us that we could not discuss this. That even goes against the long, proud history of the San Francisco Labor Council of opposing the Vietnam War when the national AFL-CIO was in favor of it. I think we need to also consider the fact that there's a lot of members of unions here who are getting these kind of instructions on not to say anything about it and things like that. I think we need to realize there's an incredible intersectionality, and we within our union have to realize the role of that the AFL-CIO played. The only way that we're going to be able to stop this war machine is to literally stop it. And we need to, even if that means we need to talk to our own union representatives and tell them, you need to step up and be with humanity and support Palestinians and to end the occupation. It's not just enough to cease fire. We need to end this occupation. We need to stop the siege on Gaza. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Brenda Barris. I'm a chapter president for SEIU 1021 out here. And I just wanted to let everybody know that our union, SEIU, is meeting Monday because we want to submit a resolution to the federal government about the stopping the killing in Gaza. And I believe that that will happen. And that's the way most of our members feel about this issue. Now, we also have members who are Israeli, who have family members in Israel. And they feel just as strongly that this needs to stop. The killing needs to stop.
Those were voices of healthcare workers at a rally to end the bombing in Gaza outside San Francisco General Hospital.
That'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism, but we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate. And to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate. And that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurt and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach and would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us, send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning, where is the love?
Where is the love? Where is the love?
That was Where is the Love by Black Eyed Peas. You're listening to Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Ann Garrison. The connection between South Africa and Israel is part of the history of apartheid. Mehmet Wesabe is the president of the General Industrial Workers Union of South Africa. In a conversation with Pacifica's Steve Seltzer, Sabe talked about a national labor tribunal on the situation of workers in Namibia, the workers' struggle in South Africa, and the connection between the Zionist regime in Israel and apartheid South Africa.
We come from a common history of apartheid. You would remember that South Africa ruled basically Namibia as a colony. since the early part of the 20th century, in the aftermath of the First World War, up until 1990. And I think it is that common and shared history that means our struggles, as well as our experiences, as a Black working class in particular, have been very common. And I think it is that common experience and shared history that bind our struggles together, in addition to overall, of course, internationalism that is a foundation of our movement. We have heard about, the horrendous treatment of the workers, particularly the National Union of Mine Workers, shop stewards who have been dismissed for simply standing up for their rights by a Chinese-owned company there. We are having a similar struggle here. In fact, the big issue at the present moment, it is the underground occupation of the mine here in South Africa by a mine that is owned by another Chinese entity, which is denying workers basic and the most elementary right to switch off from the National Union of Mine Workers here to a new left and militant mine workers union, AMCU, the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union, which also displaced NUM in the Platinum Belt, and of course it contests them vigorously in the gold mining and other sectors of the mining industry. So what is very clear, and I think this is very important for people to note, is that the investments that are coming from China, these are not acts of socialist solidarity. The fact that country, it is governed by the party whose official name is a communist party, doesn't mean that it's a socialist, doesn't mean that it's a workers' republic, and doesn't mean that in many ways is no different. It's any different from the imperialist corporations that are operating. If anything, they are worse. And that is, evident from the fact that me and you are talking here about two distinct but related cases of workers fighting and, of course, facing job losses as well as brutalization just from, fighting or rather demanding recognition and a freedom of association that they have in terms of the constitution of this country, but also in terms of the constitution of the Republic of Namibia.
So the combined struggle of the Namibian workers, the South African workers, it seems there needs to be a united front, and the institution or reinstitution of contract labor, which was used during the apartheid regime, now is being reimposed on the working class of South Africa and on the working class of Namibia, leading to horrendous conditions and the destruction of unionism.
Absolutely. In this two instances, it is about recognition and a struggle for trade union rights. But we know that it is never just about the trade union on and by itself. It is about a struggle against, in a case of South Africa, in a case of Namibia, a system of slavery, a cheap black migrant labor system, which unfortunately remains the mainstay of mining capitalism, of South African capitalism, I think here, but also in Namibia itself, which is in many ways overwhelmingly dominated by South African capitalism and so on. And I think the Chinese investment, one would have expected, as many people do seem to suggest, that is different. It is not. It has carried forward the system of the cheap migrant labor, but I think even worse is that it is stripping that labor of a hard-won democratic right to freedom of association, the freedom to join the trade unions. So I think that already says that we've got to, forge solidarity. We've got to support the workers in Namibia, just as we should also be supporting the workers who, spent days underground the mine without food. They were denied access to water and all of that. And what do they want? Just a basic trade union rights, right? So at the most immediate level, Comrade Steve, we should certainly make these two cases to link. That is, we must facilitate direct linkages between the mine workers in this particular mine and, of course, those ones in Namibia.
Do you think that capitalist companies, whether they be Chinese or international, are going to really develop the industrial base of either Namibia or South Africa?
Absolutely not. I mean, all of these sections of imperialism are taking a colonial attitude towards the countries, particularly of Southern Africa. But I think you'll find the same attitude in relation to Latin America, in relation to big parts of Asia, right? And the reality is, you know, they rely on a permanent regime of primitive accumulation. That is, you know, slavery of the black working class that is simply incompatible even with the idea of basic and elementary democratic rights. Secondly, I think lack of, super exploitation of that labor is not only evident in terms of the poverty wages, in terms of stripping that labor of its basic rights, but also in terms of lack of investment in the communities, but also in the economies where they derive the surplus, where they derive these profits. And I think the fact that what you are seeing, even with the Chinese companies, as you have with many Western multinational entities from the US and so on, is pure extractivism in relation to South Africa and in relation to Namibia.
How is the fight against imperialism connected to the political independence of the working class and the mobilization of the working class, so it itself has its own program, its own political apparatus, and its own political movement to fight not only national capitalists, but international capital?
Yes, I mean, South Africa is no different in that sense from the US. You have two factions of the same class party. We have multiples of them. They are probably numbering hundreds of factions, which I think only talks to their backwardness. But it doesn't change the essence. Those are different factions of the same class party. The working class is voiceless. And I think, how does that relate to the issue of Palestine? I think it's a point that I was trying to make. You see, the reason that the ANC cannot support the people of Palestine consistently is not because subjectively they lack an intention and a will. Many of those people are former freedom fighters. They know what apartheid is. They made sacrifices that could be expected of anybody. But here is a logic of their position. Once they assumed management of capitalism from an apartheid regime that they ended in 1994, that tied them to imperialism. Because what is imperialism? Ultimately, monopoly capitalism, and its corporations and its interests in the systems of global productions, and supply chain that tie capitalism or rather national capital all over the world. It is that system of global production based on division, but also united world market. That means that you can't, in the service of capital, in one country, without in one or the other being in the service of imperialism. That is at the core of the contradictions between the rhetoric and, you could even say, a genuine personal feelings on the part of the ANC people and, of course, their real action, which is they are collaborating with Zionism. That is the reason we need a party that is not only tied to those cooperate interests, but more than that, has a clear program of opposing itself to those interests and their agenda in the economy here in South Africa, but also globally. And I think that is a reason that for us, and linked with this campaign, and this is a point that we've made actually in the Palestinian Solidarity Movement, to say you cannot divorce the question of Palestinian solidarity with the question of the struggles in this country. The ANC cannot be allies, because the reality is, the logic by which they portrayed the struggles of the working class in this country is what dictates their portrayals of the Palestinian masses. And therefore, we need, out of this campaign, to also develop a campaign for a mass political party of the working class that will take up the issues of the working class in this country, but also the struggle against imperialism, against oppression, against any form of the violence of the system against the working class people in this country and internationally. That is the only basis of true working class solidarity and internationalism. We cannot have a separate policies or a policy for South Africa and a policy for Palestine. Those policies should be and are a continuation of one policy, the same as it applies to imperialism. That, and I think I've said this before in the show, that a foreign policy of any government and any party is but an application of a domestic policy on an international plane. The same applies with the working class. Unless we have a party of our own, a party not tainted by the corrupting and, of course, cooperate interest to imperialism, unless we have such a party, we would also be talking right and, of course, talking left, working right. So we must link this with the other struggles that are happening in the country, and that means the struggles that are calling us to have a mass workers' parties here, but I think also everywhere, and I think linking those parties in an international, workers, and of course, a new socialist, mass revolutionary Marxist international. I mean, the same thing applied, by the way, to the struggles of the Palestinian people, right? And I said this to comrades in the movement who seem to suggest that our solidarity with the people of Palestine, including the right to resist, and even by means of arms, it means everything goes. I said, no. Part of that solidarity is sharing our experiences of struggles, including putting forward a program which and only which we can have a genuine freedom for the masses of Palestine. And this is what I said. I said, look, if the masses of the black working class in this country, you know, feel that the national democratic state of the ANC is a nightmare, that it is not uncommon to hear black workers, to hear black working class people comparing the current regime unfavorably with apartheid regime, that people, you can hear them saying that today things are worse than they were in the past. What would be the situation on the basis of a capitalist Palestine, which in the situation would only be an equivalent, not even of South Africa in that sense, but would be an equivalent of the Bantustan that South African working class rejected, that was actually supported by the likes of Buthelezi and so on and so on, right? That you have such a Bantustan overwhelmingly dominated by Israeli cooperations, by Israeli imperialism, but more than that, led under a party, by the way, that is going to entail oppression for the women, persecution of religious minorities, the LGBTQ people, and so on. It would be a nightmare. And that is the reason that even in our struggle and solidarity with the people of Palestine, we've got to put forward a question that the only genuine freedom and a free Palestine that would be realistic in this situation is in the form of the workers and, of course, a socialist republic of Palestine that can also link with the working class of the whole of Middle East in a socialist federation that can develop not only the productive forces of society, but put that at the disposal of the working class to meet all their needs for housing, for jobs, for education, and access to all the basic services that would raise the quality of life out of the horrendous conditions that we are witnessing at the present moment, which is nothing short of barbarism in Palestine, but also in the vast regions of Middle East.
That was Memetwe Sebe, president of the General Industrial Workers Union of South Africa, speaking with Pacifica's Steve Seltzer. And that concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by the Capitalism, Race, and Democracy Collective, with contributions from Akua Holt, Don DeBar, Freddie Libertad, Thomas O'Rourke, Polina Vasiliev, and Steve Seltzer. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalismraceanddemocracy.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on Twitter at PacificaCRD. I've been your host, Ann Garrison. Thanks for listening.